We have something a little new to offer for those of you who have children that are maybe a tween age and under. Hillcrest is now providing something called Sermon Kids, and it's a little activity worksheet that connects with the messages that we're doing that will be beneficial for them if they're sitting in service with you here today. You can pick them up every Sunday at the welcome counter, and we've got a few up here. If you need one, slip up your hand, and my son Ryan, maybe, will run around and hand them out to you. Anybody need one, just slip up your hand? All right. I see at least one over there. Anybody on this side? All right. Thanks, Ryan. It's a good helper. Good way for your children to be connected into the message as well. One of the things that's important for us here at Hillcrest is that we spend time together as a family of believers, but also we want you as parents to be equipped to talk about spiritual things with your children. Scripture gives you the responsibility for the spiritual development of your children. And a tool like this is a great tool for you to be able to, after service, be able to say, what did you learn? Or what did Pastor Doug say that you learned? It's just a good way to connect and have some of those discussions. So we want to encourage you to get involved and to do that. Now, in this series, Modern Family, like I said earlier, we're going to be using various video clips from the sitcom along the way to help us, I hope, help us illustrate some real-life situations. I ended up watching portions of this sitcom last season. I was kind of late in the game. Someone told me it was really funny, and I said, well, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about some of the characters in there, or really what some of this thing is about. And I watched a couple episodes, and it was amazing to me how true to life they brought situations. And they brought a lot of humor into it. But it's not just things to make you laugh, but it also had things in it that made you think. And I appreciated that. And so as we were doing our planning series, we said, look, we're going to do a series on family. We're going to do one that talks about, you know, conflict and relationships and marriages and dealing with our kids. We just thought maybe we could bring a little bit of this into it, to bring a little humor into the situation, at the same time raise some questions along the way. So to show you an example of that when it comes to conflict, I'm going to show you a clip from Episode 5 of Modern Family. The episode is called Coal Digger. And the issue of coal digging, you're going to have to wait until 2 weeks from now to kind of see how this setup gets resolved. But it is certainly a conflict that develops, and you're going to see how different people react to that conflict. So take a look at a clip from Episode 5.
No problem. We'll be right down. Thanks.
Hey, honey, what's up?
The school just called. Luke got in a fight.
Oh, jeez. Is he okay?
Yeah, he's fine, but they want us to come down there. Where are you?
I'm showing a house.
What house?
I'm golfing.
I bet it was that Durkis kid.
I hate that kid.
He probably jumped on Luke, and Luke just fought back. Kid's a menace.
He made fun of my hair once.
The parents are probably in there.
This stuff don't look funny like it never happened to him.
What are you doing here?
These two knuckleheads were fighting each other.
What?
Could have been worse. I was not ready to face Durkis today.
So what happened?
Well, apparently there was some name-calling and shoving on the playground. By the time a teacher separated them, Luke was sitting on Manny's chest.
Luke, that's not like you.
Wait a minute. You're Luke's father?
Grandfather.
So Manny's father is...
Javier. That AC guy. That's where he gets his fire.
Okay. You're...
He's our son.
And my grandson.
I'm his daughter.
So you're...
His uncle. Stop saying that or I'll sit on your chest again.
Oh, wait a second. Is that what this was all about?
Keeps calling me his nephew.
You are my nephew.
Shut up.
Okay,
hey.
Okay. I'm getting the sense that you're all related somehow. So it's probably best if you work this out at home so the boys can go back to class, okay? But we're not happy about this, boys. This is not how mature young men behave. Here's your note from Miss Passwater. Look, I wouldn't worry. They're good kids. It's just tough when one kid's a little different.
Yes. You heard how she said that, right? Jace. She thought Luke was the weird one. Luke,
her kid gets his head stuck in the furniture
And Manny is the different one.
I will tell you what's weird. Our son is not weird. What's weird is that her kid wears aftershave and dresses like a count.
I think we should cancel with them for their barbecue.
If we cancel, it'll just make this a bigger deal than it is. It'd be good for Luke and Manny to spend some time. Might be good for you and Gloria, too.
Why? She's always had a problem with me. I think I'm gonna find out what it is.
That's the worst thing you could do. Just sweep it under the rug.
I'm not a sweeper.
Trust me on this.
I think you two need to talk it out.
I don't have anything to say to her. She's the one with the problem, not me.
Whose side are you on?
She's my daughter. You're my wife. Let's remember what's important here. There's a football game on.
I just hate it when my two girls aren't getting along.
How exactly is she your girl?
All right. So there we have a conflict that has ensued. Now, I give you a little hint into some of these characters. Phil and Claire are married together. Phil is the one that we kind of call Dr. Phil with hair. He is always trying to be a diplomat in the situation. But if you'll notice, I'm going to look at a few different conflict styles. Phil and Claire, when they're first walking into the school, they are demonizing another kid, a kid named Durkus. And they are concluding that if Durkus is involved, that they somehow are automatically not responsible for whatever's taking place. So they're trying to bolster that up a little bit. The principal has a unique sense in how he deals with conflict. What he's decided to do is handle it more in an institutionalized way. It's more of policy. He doesn't really care to solve the problem. He just has a responsibility because it's in his school to do something about it. But the minute he finds out that they're related, he says, oh, better you just handle this at home. He's easy to wash his hands of the situation. But both Claire and Gloria on the drive home try to do what we might call commiserate with their husbands. The goal is to try and get this anger or this frustration to well up inside their husband, and the more people you get into that kind of a system, the more you feel right about your position. And so they're really making an attempt to do that. But you got to notice the difference between the two husbands. Phil, as we've talked about, he likes to be kind of the therapist. And so he is very open to giving her advice, and I think the two of you should talk. But then he makes a really dumb statement at the end when he says, I hate it when my two girls fight. And that's when she looks over at him and says, how exactly is she your girl? Phil is a little mesmerized by Jay's wife, and so he's always making those inappropriate comments. But Phil's suggestion is a right one. But because he makes that dumb comment, Claire decides everything he says, he doesn't have to pay attention to, so she ignores it. Now, Jay, on the other hand, does nothing. You notice he's silent the entire time. His thought is that Gloria is just going to burn herself out. But when she finally settles down and she says, I'm going to find out what it is, that's when he speaks up. She says, don't you just sweep it under the rug. She says, I'm not the sweeper. But he definitely is a sweep under the rug kind of guy. And so the conflict is starting to develop and grow. Like I said, you're not going to see how this thing ends up for another 2 weeks, but it is entertaining to say the least. Conflict is a reality. That's one thing I think we first have to come to an understanding, that conflict in our lives is a reality. It is something that each one of us is going to deal with. It's not the question of when will conflict come, or if conflict will come, but the issue is when it will come, because conflict is going to come to us. The songs that were chosen this morning prior to the service are unique songs for talking about conflict. And the reason is this. You heard different things in these songs. Come as you are. You heard songs about surrender. You heard songs that were focusing on the idea of sacrifice. If you miss anything today along the way, I want to tell you what this message I'm going to give is about and what the application is about. Can we just right on the front end, all right? This is the deal. Conflict is inevitable, but when we align our lives with Christ, we understand that our life needs to be a life of sacrifice for others, that we need to be willing to give all to Christ, and part of that is our right to be right and to be heard sometimes, to let go of our defenses, and to live in the power of Christ and in His Spirit. If Jesus was in your conflicts, how would He handle them? Probably very different than most of us. So that's the point of what we're going to be talking about today. Now I want to build into that a little bit and make it practical and help us understand some ways that that can take place. I want to show you a list here of different conflict styles. Now, this isn't an exhaustive list. This is actually my own list. So if you're making notes or jotting these down, some of these might be helpful for you, but you might find more terms or more things along the way. Some of us, when it comes to conflict, we are demonizers. And when I say demonizers, that means in our style of conflict when it comes, we choose to demonize or make the other person look extremely bad. And the worse we can make them look, or the more that we can put blame on them, or the more that we can point to everything they do wrong, we seem to be able to absolve ourselves of all responsibility because they are such bad people. Okay, demonizing is a very common trait when it comes to conflict resolution. You might be a demonizer. You try and get some people on your team. You try and get people to believe that this thing is wrong. And the more you get on your team, the more you feel like you're in the right and they're in the wrong. You no longer have to deal with your own stuff when that takes place. But it doesn't solve, it does not resolve, and it brings no resolution. The next one here is institutional. And that's that some of us don't actually care about solving conflict at all. We just feel some level of responsibility, and we do the bare minimum of what we need to do to resolve the conflict at our level, but not actually fix whatever the situation is. That's what the principal was doing in the story. More of an institutionalized thing. If it's co-workers at work, you're just trying to just get the peace, you know. It's kind of like the Rodney King statement that he made years ago. Can't we all just get along? It's not really a solving the problem, but just glossing over it and doing just enough to get it off your plate and not feel responsible or connected to the conflict anymore. This next one is commiserate. Commiserate has a lot of similarities to demonize because you need other people to feel your pain and to agree that you are a victim along the way. And it's important for people who commiserate to get a large group of people to see them as a victim. And if they are able to do that, it fuels your determination on your position. And the more we can join into our commiserating, the more we feel like we're right and they're wrong. Then there's the fighter. The fighter likes to be loud and intimidating in whatever way that might be, and try to overpower the conflict in hopes that being strong and firm in it will beat down the conflict, not resolve it. In fact, I'm not sure the fighter is ever really looking to resolve. The fighter is looking to say, if you engage in conflict with me, you will suffer along the way. I'm going to win. It supposedly ends quickly and in their favor, but as you might guess, that conflict never actually ends. There's also the idea here of the turtle. The turtle is the person who just shuts down in the face of conflict. Climb into their shell. They kind of feel, as long as I'm in my shell, no one can hurt me. I won't stick an arm out, not sticking my neck out. I'm just going to play dead. The tiger's going to hit the shell. It's going to spin off all over the place. I'm going to act like there's nothing in there. This kind of conflict resolution doesn't resolve a conflict, but it's more of a style people use for self-preservation. They don't know how to deal with the conflict, so they just shut down in it. That's the turtle idea. Then we have the clinical approach. The clinical approach is definitely the Dr. Phil approach, and Phil in this sitcom uses it often. Maybe a little different from the sitcom, the clinical approach is usually an individual that can stay calm or maybe understand some things about conflict, but that becomes an arrogance for them. And they feel that if they can point out the clinical side of the conflict situation, they are superior to the conflict, and you are insuperior to it because you're maybe run more by your emotions or these other things. And so it is not a way of resolving conflict, but a way of saying, look, I've got it together and you don't. So obviously, you have to listen to me and I'm right in this. And if you don't agree with that, that's just because you're irrational. It is so frustrating to fight with a clinical person. When you have conflict. Last one I have down here is sarcasm. This is the person that takes light of everything. They joke about it. They use sarcasm maybe in a hurtful way, or they just try to bring humor into it and laugh it off. This is definitely a sweep it under the rug thing. What can I say to relieve the tension? We can sweep it under the rug and laugh a little bit. And then if you're in conflict with a person like that, all of a sudden you can realize we've moved on but never actually dealt with the conflict. It's still there. but we laughed about it, and somehow now it's awkward for me to bring it back up. If this happens again and again, like Phil said, you get a lumpy rug, and it's a tripping hazard. It truly is. So I want you to identify this morning, what is your approach to conflict? Is it one of these, or have you created your own hybrid? You got maybe a mix of the two. If you're not sure what your conflict style is, ask the person sitting next to you. They've got you dialed in. In fact, most of you, as I'm going through this, you're not thinking of your own conflict style. You're thinking of the people that you love, that have conflict with you. You've identified their style. I want you to let go of those around you, and I want you to look at this list. I want you to identify yours. What is your conflict style? I can see some ideas being shared with each other and going, no, that's not me. That's ridiculous. Or say, that's your conflict style. And then you go, yeah, turtle. None of us likes conflict. In fact, if you're here this morning and you say, I enjoy conflict, you probably need some counseling help. It's not a healthy approach. You may be good with conflict. That's different. But to like conflict. Conflict is a part of life. It's a part of change. It's a part of growth. It's a part of moving forward. It's a part of getting better. It's a part of obtaining things that we want. You can't get married without conflict being in there. You can't have children without conflict being a part of the relationship. You can't be a parent with adult children and not have conflict somewhere in the relationship. You can't have a friend and not have conflict be a part of the relationship. Conflict is a normal part of life, but it's how we deal with the conflict that impacts what that conflict is like and the impact that that conflict has with us. So I'd like to focus this morning on some advice that Paul gives us. He gives us some advice in the letter to the Ephesians. We just got done studying Galatians. It's the book immediately after Galatians. And Paul's focus on many of his letters are for unity in the church. He wants people to be united together and not torn apart. Conflict can be a great uniter, but it can also be something that tears us apart. And then when Paul corrects the issues that are bringing a lack of unity, he uses some illustrations or some examples or some teachings to help guide us back to the point of uniting together instead of being pulled apart. So we're going to take a look this morning at chapter 4, because Paul's going to make a statement here that I want to look at a bit closer. So if you'd open your Bibles, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 26 through 27, and we're going to look at page 897 if you're using one of the memorial Bibles. Sermon page might just say verse 26. I have added verse 27 into it because it's a very important part of the passage. So here goes Ephesians 4:26-27. And don't sin by letting anger control you. Don't let the sun go down while you are still angry, for anger gives a foothold to the devil. When conflict does not get resolved, anger can creep in to unresolved conflict. It's the anger in conflict that decimates resolution and reconciliation. So Paul says, don't sin by letting anger get control of you. Now, in first century Judaism, these are the Jewish people back around the time of Jesus. They had a lot of teachings about anger. Some of those are contained in our scriptures. Others are a part of those religious writings. They believed this. They believed that if you allowed yourself to get angry, that emotion of anger was a magnet for evil spirits to come into a person and into a situation. That's what they taught. We have some interesting texts in the Bible that talk about how these demons left a person and they roamed around to find a place to live. And eventually they came back to this person because nothing filled the void. And so they came back to this person. So there is some scriptural evidence that there are demonic powers out there that are looking for people to dwell. Now, theologically, we need to understand this. Angels and demons cannot read your mind. They are not omnipotent as God is. They can only see your actions and hear your words. And so the Jewish teaching is that an expression of anger is a magnet, like a megaphone to those forces, and it's a magnet drawn to it. Because once you kind of let that anger out or open yourself to the anger, you become more capable to do things that you wouldn't be able to do without that anger. It is a recipe for disaster. In fact, I mean, doesn't Paul allude to it right here? He says, for anger gives a foothold to the devil. You're going to be angry, yes, we'll get into that, but it's that anger gives a foothold to the devil. And once the devil gets a foothold in your life, he'll take control. We need to be aware of that. The anger isn't just an emotion. Now, I'm not talking about what we would call a righteous anger. That is not an anger that is built on emotion. A righteous anger is an anger that is built on thought and knowledge and values and passion. But it's not in an expression or a emotion of anger. The emotion of anger is what we're talking about here. It gives a foothold to Satan. Satan can creep in. Look at the crimes. Look at the murders. Look at the destruction in our world. It is linked to anger. Crimes of passion. When you open yourself up in the field of anger and you decide, hey, it's just my deal, just the way I deal with stuff, and you don't check it, your life will fall apart. If you continue to let it happen, you will become capable of doing things that you were never capable of before. Murder happens out of anger that is unchecked, and Satan has gotten his foothold, and he has left a wake of destruction. Each one of us is only so far away from something like that happening if we let anger be unchecked in our lives. For every one of us, anger throws a switch. And some of you can feel it. I can feel it. I can feel when I'm in conflict, and I feel it kind of starting to boil up. Do you know what that feeling is? We say it makes our blood boil. And then all of a sudden, it kind of reaches a peak. And it's like my last moment of sanity. It's like there's this little voice in my head that says, calm down. And another one says, take off the lid. Ready to Hulk out, you know, split my shirt and argh. And that's a dangerous spot for me. Because once I flip that switch, there's no coming back. All of a sudden, you say things and you do things that you never would have done without that anger. You need to visualize this. That as that anger starts to creep up like that, there are demonic spirits huddling around you, ready to jump in. And the minute you let the lid off that thing, they just come in and have their way with you. And you leave destruction in everybody's life. Your tongue becomes a flame of fire. It cuts people down. It tears them apart. Your mind, instead of thinking of resolution, thinks of the most vile things you can come up with. A bitterness gets seated down inside you that no level of calmness can quench. It's hard to overcome those things. It's hard to bring reconciliation in those situations. It's hard to eat crow and come back and say I was wrong. The Spirit can give us that ability and that power, but there's something that happens when that switch flips. This is why the Scriptures tell us to avoid anger. In James 1, 19 and 20, it says this, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters, you must all be quick to listen and slow to speak and slow to get angry. Human anger does not produce the righteousness God desires. Human anger. Be slow to get angry. Don't let that switch flip. Try to stay calmer in the situation. We're going to get to how we do some of that. In Proverbs, it says, a gentle answer deflects anger, but harsh words make tempers flare. This is so true. Now, I want to remove one phrase from your vocabulary. You are never allowed again to say, you made me angry, or that person made me angry. I want you to know it is impossible for anyone to ever make you angry. You have decided to let the anger in you out. But people don't make you angry. The situation maybe comes at you and you decide, okay, I'm going to flip the switch and I'm going to Hulk out on these people. You maybe have made that decision, but they didn't make you angry. You had that all stored up, ready to go. They just presented the opportunity for you, and you felt justified to let it fly. No one ever makes you angry. Anger is already inside of you. That's one thing we have to understand when we look at anger, especially from this biblical perspective. A gentle answer deflects anger. Harsh words makes tempers flare. Proverbs 22:24 says, don't befriend angry people or associate with hot-tempered people. And if you have people in your life that are just angry people, then don't let them dish that to you. Don't let them continue to fill you with that. You can be friends with them. You can love them. You can encourage them. You can pray for them. But they shouldn't be the people you spend all your time with. Because you need to get away from that at times and be around more positive people. Proverbs 29:11 says, fools vent their anger, but the wise quietly hold it back. Haven't you been told that it's unhealthy to restrain your anger? I've heard that so many times. I tell you what, anyone that says that to me, it says, I've been told I just have to let it go. Kind of like Claire did in that little monologue of hers. Yeah, I'm the kind of person that just speaks my mind. Nobody's interested in your mind. Nobody. And how does speaking your mind ever make your life better? It doesn't. How does it make other people's lives around you better? It doesn't. Ecclesiastes 7:9 says, control your temper, for anger labels you a fool. Anger is not helpful, but anger is a normal part of the human condition. It's going to be there, but it's what we do with it, how we deal with it, that matters. And in this light, Paul tells us the best antidote for anger and conflict. Okay, so let's go back to our verse here, because it says, don't let the sun go down while you are still angry. This is a very important phrase. Throughout the Old Testament and Jewish writings, you're going to see again and again where people are told to get things completed before the sun goes down. In Deuteronomy, there's a passage that talks about how you have to pay someone their day's wage if they're working for you before the sun goes down. You have to finish business on a business day. You can't hold it over the next day and say, I'll get you tomorrow. You have to do it by then. If you borrow someone's coat, it says, you have to return that coat before sundown. In other words, you need to be prompt. You need to be proactive about your issues in life, whether it's borrowing something or certainly this, being angry and being in relationship. You need to solve it before sun goes down. Now, that's great if that can happen in a 24-hour days, but some of you may have conflicts that are greater than a 24-hour day conflict. But the idea is that you stay on it and stay at it until you solve it. Because if you let conflict go unchecked and unaddressed, it will eventually fan itself into a flame that will be a flame of destruction in your life and the life of others. There are a lot of people that come into my office for marital counseling. They say, we have grown apart. Do you know what they are really saying? They're saying there were some issues that were probably small long ago and we never dealt with them, and we held them in and we held them against one another, and now we don't like each other. It's now become an inferno between us and we don't know how to get back. If you have an issue, nobody likes to talk about issues. Nobody likes conflict. But better to deal with a conflict today than let it smolder and fester over a period of time. That's why Paul says the best way to do this is don't let the sun go down while you're still angry. Now, when Paul said this, he was actually quoting a passage out of the book of Psalms. A lot of people don't realize that. In Psalm 4:4, it says this, don't sin by letting anger control you. Think about it overnight and remain silent. Don't let anger control you. Now, do you know why David wrote this? David was the king of Israel. He was a king. And he had this son named Absalom. And Absalom decided that he wanted something different than King David wanted. And so he held a revolt against the king and his army, against his own father. People were dying. It was terrible. It was like this inner family issue that was going on. And when David had the opportunity to kill Absalom, he said this: I don't want my sin to control me. And the next day he woke up and did not let the sin control him, and he did not kill his son Absalom. Had every right to, militarily, governmentally. But he decided not to let sin rule the day. Is conflict and anger winning in your life? Is conflict in your life going unresolved? Are you using a tactic that is not helping the process? Now, I have shown this in the past many times, and with fear of repetition, I'm going to show it again anyways. If you've been a part of my premarital counseling, or you come into my office and you've got conflict issues, you're going to see this again and again. I honestly do not remember where I got it from. I don't know if I made it up or if I read it somewhere. But it's called the conflict pyramid. If you know where it comes from, let me know so I can give credit where credit's due. I've used it so long now, it's just a part of me. There's a conflict pyramid. One here and one here. This is how the conflict pyramid works. It's to be used as a visual illustration in your mind when you're in the midst of conflict. The bottom of the pyramid is baseline zero conflict, okay? It's a happy, great place to be. So here, it's down here. This is zero conflict. That's what we like. Now, when conflict happens in a relationship, somebody says something or does something to elevate the situation and create conflict, okay? So it could be whatever it is. Think of, you know, your last couple days with people around you, or you had conflict. What was said, you know? Something said by this person over here and raised now to a level of higher conflict. Now, this person was down here. Maybe they're a little blindsided by that conflict. They're not really sure what in the world was going on. Now, they have a choice. They can continue to stay at this neutral spot. The best way to do it is to try and de-escalate the conflict, or they can make a choice to join them climbing up the pyramid. They can escalate the conflict. So this person says something here, and then this person says something here. Now, once we're up at this level of higher conflict, the door is now open to climb even higher. You say, you know, oh, you this? Oh, yeah? Well, you this? Oh, yeah, yeah? Well, you this, this? Oh, yeah, your mama smells. And you just go on up the pyramid, right? When you get up here, this is an episode of domestic abuse on cops. Okay? That's what happens up here. But I want you to see something. You cannot climb the pyramid by yourself, and it takes two people to climb up the pyramid. If somebody climbs up here, and then you say something here, and then this person goes up here, at any point you can de-escalate and say, I'm sorry I said that. Or you can say, you know, let's bring this down. I love you. I care about you. This isn't what I want. You can de-escalate it. Now, your conflict may still remain at this level, but it's going to have a hard time going up higher. It's hard to go higher when someone's de-escalating. Usually it can only stay there. It certainly can't get up here, whatever this terrible thing is. So even if you get to here, you can de-escalate back down. This person's still frustrated here or here. The more unhealthy a person is, the quicker they can jump the pyramid. But generally, they can't go too much higher than this. And then eventually, they can come down because you're going to continue to love them and encourage them and try and get back to this spot. But people that come into my office up here, they do this. They say, he made me do it. I say, no way. We're going to teach you some tango lessons. It takes two to tango. And you both danced your way up that pyramid. It was a choice that you made. Now, this weekend, my two children, Casey and Ryan, were playing a game of Candyland. You ever played Candyland? Good game. But there's a problem. When you're drawing the cards for Candyland, you get farther and farther on the board, you can draw a card, and it's got this little fat character on it, and his name is Plumpy. Kids, what happens when you get Plumpy? You go all the way back to the bottom. It's a bummer, especially when you're almost at the end. And I caught a little bit of conflict on video for you. So, let's take a look at the beginning conflict, okay? Now, you're going to see they're at a level playing field, just playing a game, And my youngest son, Ryan, is going to take his first step up the conflict pyramid, okay? Here he is.
Yes, I got two blues. Oh, man, I got sent back to Plumpy.
Haha, you get sent back to Plumpy.
Okay, now, my kids have a choice right now, right? Ryan has invited Casey to step up the conflict pyramid. Now, what do you think Casey's going to do? Casey, if she's doing this right, will de-escalate. I'm going to show you what de-escalating looks like, okay?
Ryan, that doesn't make me feel very good when you say that. Can we just play the game?
Ooh, don't you wish your kids acted like mine? Huh? Huh? Yeah, a little correction, nice calm voice. You know, I don't feel bad when you say that. So you got the I feelings, you know. Can we just play the game? Ryan seems to be really just taken back. Now, he can't go up the pyramid because his sister de-escalated. She was actually in control. Awesome. But my house isn't always like that. Sometimes we get this response.
That's so mean. Who do you think you are in that hat, Sherlock Holmes?
Okay, so in that clip, okay, Ryan stepped up the pyramid and Casey decided to join him and make fun of his hat, all right? So now he has a hurt feeling. Now, this is where things, tension really gets going. And both these kids are, they're just inviting each other. Let's go mountain climbing, okay? But Ryan, even though he started it, he has a choice to either go up or to de-escalate again. Let's see what his choice is here.
That's so mean. Who do you think you are in that hat, Sherlock Holmes?
I'm sorry, Casey. I shouldn't have laughed at you.
Yeah, or...
That's so mean. Who do you think you are in that hat, Sherlock Holmes?
Ow!
You see, we've always got a choice. Now, this has gotten, I think, to the point where it's pretty out of control. It's not to the top of the pyramid. In our family, we go higher than that. In fact, Grandma was over visiting, and she's got a cane. And, yeah, roll the clip. This is the top. Now, this can never happen, okay? This can't happen. You can't go from the bottom of the pyramid to the top.
I got two blues.
Oh, man, I got sent back to Plumpy.
Haha, you get sent back to Plumpy.
Okay, they're amazing actors, aren't they? Give them a hand. Good job, Ryan. The thing I want to get across is that someone can't go from, like, if Ryan escalates here, Casey can't get up here. She may want to, but it's completely out of proportion. I mean, unless she's got some kind of bipolar thing going on. But she can go here. If she's just really unhealthy, she might be able to go here, but she can't go here. You can't get laughed at and get hit with a cane. Not in my house. You got to kind of provoke it. And pretty soon we're doing things and saying things that we never should have said or should have ever done. I want to encourage you not to climb the conflict pyramid. And next time you have conflict, I want it to be visually in your mind, and I want you to make a conscious decision whether you're going to climb it, you're going to escalate it, or you're going to de-escalate it. And I want you to own your choice. Doesn't mean the other person comes right down. You can't hold anything against them and say, hey, they're still inappropriate, so now I have the right to climb up. No, that's a choice you're making, and it's a poor choice. You make a choice to de-escalate. And if you make a choice to de-escalate, Satan is not going to gain a foothold in your life. But if you decide to climb the conflict pyramid, you're not going to like your climbing guide along the way. Let's pray. Father, Father God, we thank you for your love for us. And Lord, we are reminded of the conflict that you had to endure, and in the midst of that conflict, you gave your life. And that you've asked us to be people of sacrifice, and people of love, and a people that put others before us. Lord, in so many of our relationships, we're trying to gain some level of power, some level of control, and Lord, I know in my own heart that whenever I try to do that, it never ends right. Lord, help us to be people that love others more than we love the power or the control. Would we be a people that when conflict arose, that we would handle it in a loving, compassionate way, and that when we are invited by others to climb this pyramid, that we just wouldn't climb it. That we care more about how they're doing than how we're doing. To the example that you've set for us. We love you. We thank you for these words of encouragement that we've gotten from your scriptures today. Help us live them out in our lives so that we become more like you. We love you. Help us with our conflict. In Jesus' name, amen. On a kind of a closing note, some of you may be dealing with significant levels of conflict. If you need help, we want to encourage you to come and talk to us so that we can get you guided in the right direction. Maybe it's marriage counseling that you need. Maybe just personal counseling. Maybe it's just a situation that just seems so messy you're not sure what to do with. You can make an appointment with us and come on in. But we want to help you along the way in finding how to get back off this pyramid if you've been climbing it for so long, and really where the health can be found along the way. So God bless you as you go from here. Go from this place loving others. Thank you for coming. You're dismissed.